Mark, of course, as you mentioned, he's the founder of the King's Men, and it's a nonprofit organization. It's dedicated to forming men into authentic leaders, protectors, and providers. And he's lectured internationally and is a popular speaker at many men's conferences around the country here. Mark is a published author, and he's an expert in the area of pornography and its healing its victims. I've heard Mark, and I've been to some of his healing retreats as he's asked me to witness them and make my comments. And Mark has got a lot of insights and a lot of intuition about what it is to heal men who've been abused sexually and have been abused in other ways. And so this is one of the reasons I asked Mark to take on the subject of sexual integrity, the secrets young men keep. And I'm looking forward to this because Mark is somewhat insightful in this area. And he has been a chastity speaker, especially before he started the King's Men, for a number of years. And so it's an area he knows well. And I look forward to hearing what he has to say. Mark Houck.
It's my third presentation at Masculine Genius Institute. First one I did in Mundelein. Dave and Philip, of course, were there. And I spoke on Augustine's vision of manliness. Augustine is the patron saint of the King's Men apostolate and certainly has a lot to say about sexuality in his own journey, in his confessions. Last year, I took us on a journey through the paths of leadership for young men. Again, I encourage you to pick up the Summit 1 CD set out there. It's just invaluable. I think we're doing trailblazing work with the Masculine Genius Institute, and not because I'm involved in it. It's not self-serving. By saying that, I make nothing by saying that. It just blesses you, and it's amazing what has been done. And last year was no different with the speakers that were there at Villanova. Again, that's out there for you as well. I want to tell you a story. It was mid-August 1986. A young boy is turning 12. He gets up early and puts on a three-piece suit. He's had a few days now to plan his outfit for his birthday. This will be a very special birthday for this boy, not because 12 is a critical age in his young masculine journey, indeed it is, but because the impact of this day is going to forever change his life. The gifts that he will receive this day are meaningless compared to the magnitude of the meaning surrounding what he is about to do in the next few hours. You see, this young man is about to bury his 43-year-old father. As the youngest of four children, this boy feels very much alone, scared, confused by all that has taken place over the course of the last 90 days, where his father laid in a comatose state in a hospital bed. So many questions he has racing through his young mind. Who will teach me how to be a man? Who will teach me how to shave? Who will teach me how to tie a tie? Who will talk to me about girls? Who will teach me how to do the change attire, attire or an oil change on a car? How am I going to ask a girl out on a date? How do I cope with my burgeoning hormones? These wouldn't be words he would use at that age, but these are marinating in a very real sense in this young man's mind. Who will be there to calm him down when the world introduces such scandalous and impure things to him? Who will be there to mentor and guide him to adulthood? Again, the young boy wouldn't be able to articulate this at this time. And I know this boy very well. The answer to all those questions is no one. No one was there. And I speak firsthand because that young boy was me. Why did I lead with this story? I lead with it because it is a common truth for many young men today and many men today. Why are so many men confused about their sexuality and struggling to navigate through the pornified culture. Because they don't have someone, and this is the first truth maxim that I submit to you for you to really think about and cogitate on. The first maxim that I'd like to offer is it's a struggle for men because they have no one to guide them through their journey. You can't read this stuff. I think Joe did a great job of talking about some of the mentors in his life. You can't read your way into this knowledge. It has to be bestowed, as Jesus said. It has to be given. It has to be offered to the boy. Whether he has an absent father like I had in my life, or an emotionally absent father, which I think is worse than a physical death. I think that's far worse than a physical death, is an emotionally absent father. Because he's there and he's not there, in truth. Young men are struggling today to find peace. And I say this, and as I wrote it, I thought, how's this going to come across? Because you say the word sexuality and, you know, the LGBT, you know, movement and LGBT, whatever the words are, the letters are. Sexuality is like a buzzword. But he's really struggling, and young men are finding peace with their sexuality, which is really their personhood. Not sex, who they are as a boy, as a male. Why did God make me? The ancients used to discuss, like, even the morphology of their body. Like the ancients, the Augustines, the Ambroses, they would talk about the body part. And what's the purpose of these things? Why did God make me a man? Boys don't understand this stuff. Most men don't understand it. Most men can't even articulate. I got a funny story I'll share with you later about me helping my son understand these things. I have six children. Three boys and three girls. The oldest is 9. The youngest is 1. Two of the youngest are boys. But anyhow, young men are struggling today to find peace with their sexuality. Even my own son, peace with his own sexuality. That knowledge. And truth be told, they're struggling with peace on this virtue of chastity. A lot of them think it's celibacy. You ask a kid in Catholic school, they would almost say, well, isn't that celibacy? They don't even know what the word means. It's chastity. Philip used to joke years ago. Maybe he still jokes. I haven't heard him say this joke. But he thinks, or at least at the time, he would tease me and Damien a little bit about overusing the word chastity. And I think there was merit in some of what he was saying. He liked sexual integrity, and I like that too. I like sexual integrity. I think that builds the man up a little bit more. Chastity is a great word. It's a God word. It's an awesome word. I speak on chastity. However, I think, again, because you lose in the translation, the understanding of this word, you almost say, well, that's for women. You would almost kind of dismiss that. Like the Holy Rosary, that's for women. No, absolutely not. One of the most manly prayers you can pray. However, we have to understand our audience and who we're speaking to. You talk to a young boy about sexual integrity, and then you talk to a young boy about being chaste. There's a filter there. I hate to say it. I mean, maybe we'll hear more from Daryl later working with boys, but there's a filter there. Talk to me about being chaste, or talk to me about building me up to be a man of integrity and character when it comes to my sexuality. Something sounds a little different, a stronger presentation. So I get what Philip was trying to impart to me and Damien at the time years ago. I mean, I come back and forth. I love the word chastity. But I'm just sharing that with you. Sometimes as we talk to boys, you may not begin there, especially a young boy, a 9-year-old boy. You may not begin with the word chaste. He may not grasp that. Kids, boys who are not mentored well during their prepubescent years and during their pubescent years will seek answers to these burning questions. They will, right? These thoughts that they have, stimulated by, we'll talk about where, television, media. They're going to seek the answers about sex and sexuality. I like to say, as I worked with parents over the years, and I've talked to many parents and certainly with children, and even my own children, you got to make them comfortable when they're young talking to you about deep things. Now, you don't present Aquinas' 7 proofs for the existence of God to your son. I mean, It's nothing like that. But you talk about deep things. I remember when I would get in the vehicle, and I coached basketball and I coached my son's youth football, but I remember I would get in the vehicle as a single guy and I'd take the kids to an away game in high school, my old boys high school, where I went. And I'd say, all right, guys, turn off the radio. Let's talk about sex. And they were like, what? But they wanted to. And I just broke the ice. Why? Because I was comfortable in my own skin, and I could. And I knew they wanted to talk about it, but I knew they didn't have any way of brokering it or presenting it. So I said, let's just do it. And they loved it. And when I got out of the car and we got home, thank you, coach. Thank you for that. Because I know they need those answers. And I know that they may have really good moms and dads who feel completely inadequate. Why? Because you can't give what you don't have. That old maxim in the church. You can't give what you don't have. And if they never got that, it's really hard to give it unless they've really were perceptive and introspective about their life and they've read about these things and they receive some information that says this is the way it should be done. Most guys take it for granted. Now, again, my dad wasn't around, so I didn't have anyone there to talk to me about these things. But the best cases are for a father. This is put out the ideal. The best way for a boy to grow into his knowledge of sex and sexuality is for the father to present that to the boy. Can a mom do it? Sure. It's less than the best. Why? Because she's not a man. You can't connect. So I'll bring you to my story with my son. This is about 4 years ago. My son's 9. Now, the hormones of a 9-year-old boy, they double. Okay? At 9. Now, my son was 5, and if I can say this, he was getting an erection at 5, right? As if you've had children, you know that they had it's a bodily response to just life. They got to pee, and he's noticing this at 5. This is different. What is this? I don't get this. You could tell he's confused. And I said to my wife, are you noticing this too? Like he's kind of walking away. He's covering himself up. And she said, yeah, I'm not. I said, I need to talk to him. But I said, you know, first of all, I don't know what to say to him. But I need to present it in a way where it makes sense. It's just not out there. And it's timely when something's happening. And I said, please pray for me. I said, I'll pray about it. I really don't know what to say. But I knew I had to do it. I knew I had to talk to him. And I'll never forget. I was praying with him. I prayed with all the kids. It's my job. It's one of my duties as father. Every night I put them to bed and I pray with them. And we sing hymns. And it's just our ritual. It's my prayer life with my children. My spirituality is understood most profoundly these days through my fatherhood. And that's where my prayer comes from mostly. It leads a lot of my prayers. Because that's my vocation. And that's my path to holiness. And that's how God's primarily speaking to me. So that's where I'm most profoundly gaining insights into these things. So now I was praying with my son. And I noticed this again, this is 4 years ago. I noticed that he's kind of fiddling with himself in the groin area. And I don't know what he's doing. He might be just readjusting himself. But I said, son, can I talk to you about something? And he looked at me. Yeah, sure, Daddy. And I said, look, you know, Mom and I love you very much. I just want you to know how good you are and how proud we are of you. You're a good son. I said, Mark, can I talk to you a little bit about being a boy? And he's just like kind of looking at me, glazed over. And I really didn't know how to present it. And I said, son, are things happening to you that you just don't understand? And he looked at me like, what are you talking about, Dad? I don't know what you're talking about. I'm thinking about Avengers. I'm thinking about Ninja Turtles. I have no idea what you're doing. I said, son, does something ever happen to you with your body that you're just like, it's upsetting you? And he's like, Dad, I don't know what. Dad, he's just like, Dad, what are you talking about? I said, so I had to get real with him. And I went right in. And I described exactly what he was dealing with. And he was like, kind of like that, you know? And I said, son, don't worry about it. You're just like me. I connected him to his father. Because he was scared. He was confused. I said, son, don't worry about it. You're just like your dad. You're just like me. And he's fine with it. That's all he needed to hear. I didn't need to tell him any more than that to get him through that moment. Now, as he gets older, I'm going to give him more information. Of course, we're going to talk a little bit more. But at that point in his life, he just needed to reconcile what was going on to have peace. Okay, you with me? At 9, the hormones are doubling. Because curiosity is going to be triggered by society, TV, culture. And by the way, this is an impure curiosity that's being triggered. And it's most times against the free will of the child. So he's violated. His innocence is taken from him. This generation has never known a time of innocence. Remember us? I grew up in the 70s and 80s. We had innocence. It was taken from us through a really weird scenario. We stumbled upon something. But this generation with the culture, and if we've exposed them to the technological age, it's very scary that how little time they have innocence. When this happens, when this impure curiosity is triggered through society, a boy needs a man to enter his life. Again, dad is best suited for this, but a coach and a mentor could do a really good job too. Mom has the tools. She does. But it's less than the best. It's not best in her gifting to present these to the boy. She can do it. My mom had to do it. I remember asking my mom about these things, and she did the best she can. But she couldn't connect with my manly heart because she's not a man. And I think that's what we've been saying. Let's honor the gifts that we have. We're not the same. We're equal in dignity, but we're not the same. She can't bestow masculinity. She can bestow femininity, but I, as a man, affirm the femininity. I acknowledge it. Yes, you are beautiful. Studies say that the average age of pornography entering a boy's life, 10 to 13 years of age. That's like a 12-year-old study. I think that's less today. I'd say 7 to 10 would be accurate today. In light of my work with men, 90% of 8 to 16-year-olds have viewed porn online. That's as of 10 years ago. 90%. And they say, it's debatable, that the largest consumers of porn online are kids aged 12 to 17. Pope Benedict, when he visited the United States in 2008, he was at Catholic University, my alma mater, and he says, what does it mean, is he speaking to bishops? Hear these prophetic words at 2008. What does it mean to speak of protecting children when pornography and violence can be viewed in so many homes through media widely available today? What does it mean to say that we have a duty to protect children when this is what we're giving our children? You know, the old Molly Kelly and I would go and give talks and we'd say, garbage in, garbage out. You put garbage into your kids' minds, what's going to come out? You expose them to television. I don't even have a TV. Now, I'm not here to tell you do what I do, but frankly, my kids don't even know what a commercial is. And they're better for it. They're truly better for it. Look, I made a decision years ago that TV wasn't good for me. And we just carried it into our family life. My kids are outside playing. I'm from Philadelphia. So the Philadelphia Eagles won the Super Bowl last year. I played college football, scouted by the New England Patriots coming out of college. I love football. I coach football. We watched one game last year. You know what that game was? The Super Bowl. That was the only game we watched. And you know why we watched it? Because I was in Florida giving a talk, and I was at a hotel, and I had a TV. Otherwise, we would be watching that on replay or highlights here and there. And I would have been like, really good. I'm really happy that they won. I'm only sharing that with you as anecdotal evidence of how you protect the innocence of your children. The world's going to take it from them eventually. Can't we preserve it longer than 7? For me, I was exposed to pornography at 10 years of age. Most of the men I work with, they were as well, and it was a random discovery. A lot of the guys in the room could all recount the story of how they first discovered pornography. They were probably walking somewhere, saw it, or they were in an abandoned building, or they were in a workplace, or dad, or it's just how it happened. Today, it's not random. It's not a random discovery. The fact is kids are hypersexualized by the media. And again, once their innocence is taken from them, this is where the secrets begin. And that's the theme of this talk. The secrets young men keep. The secret eye cat. The secrets begin. And this is the second maxim I put forward to you. The shame is experienced. The kids know it. That's why they hide it. They're not going home, Mom, look what I discovered. Dad, look what I discovered. It's instant. Shame is experienced and felt. When you bring shame in with sexuality together, they're going to be forever linked. And this is why we have so much disorder, I believe, today in men. Because they've equated shame with their sexuality. But remember these words. In the beginning, it was not meant to be so. So I'm not here to present the theology of the body to you. That's not what I'm here for. But just remember that. When you have this shame and you experience sexuality, unless you have an extremely perceptive father who's able to pinpoint that this is happening in his son, and I'm not saying I'm that guy. That boy is going to approach his sexuality in fear. And this is why secrets are kept. This is why I kept a secret. Remember, my dad was buried at 43, and I was turning 12 years of age when he was buried. That was the birthday celebration. Dad, we buried Dad in the morning, and we went to the reception, and my caring aunts and uncles gave me gifts on the feast of Maximilian Kolbe, August 14th, 1986. I didn't have anyone to notice that this was going on in my life. The shame and the guilt that are inherent in a young boy's discovery of pornography and the self-gratification that usually corresponds with this requires a cover-up. It requires it. Because there's so much shame. Now remember the difference between shame and guilt. Shame is, I am something bad. Guilt is, I've done something bad. Now, the problem with a young man and why he keeps his secret is he confuses that. He equates shame with I'm bad. Because he's got nobody to guide him. Remember that maxim is there's no one to guide him through the troubled waters of the day when it comes to sexuality and the presentation of the hypersexualized culture. His natural response is going to be to hide it. You can't. I mean, I have three daughters and three boys, and they just naturally go outside and they find stuff and they take it inside. It could be a critter, or it could be like some sort of tool that would really cut somebody 50 years ago when it was buried in the ground. But they bring it in, but they'll naturally hide it. It's like I discovered something. I need to protect it. Now you bring the secret in, the dirty little secret. That I discovered something that I know is really foreign, confusing. Oh, it may not be right. Mom might be mad or dad might get... And there's this natural inclination to hide it. The boy is not able to take the shame and guilt and process it. He's not able to process, well, that was against my free will. Oh, that was really a mistake. That shouldn't have been there. Let me go throw this out. Or, no, let me shield my eyes. Unless he has, again, the mentor, the coach, the father, who can perceive into what's going on. And we need to be attentive to those things. You watch your kids, they'll tell you. If a kid starts to disconnect, something's wrong. We know this as teachers. I taught in the public school system for a while as a counselor, maximum security juvenile detention center. I did it for 4+ years. You got to watch kids. They'll tell you something's wrong. They will. Your son will tell you. Your daughters will tell you. And the kids at Denny's yesterday were talking out there, and he's got his earpiece in. He's got the phone on. Mom's eating breakfast, and he's totally, there's no dialogue there. There's zero dialogue. And this is why the secrets are kept. There's no dialogue. Again, certainly a mother can perceive these. In fact, a woman's probably better at perceiving it. And she should alert the father, hey, something's wrong with your son. That would be a great collaboration, complementarity. Her gifting as nurturer sees that my son emotionally is not right. There's the gifting. Now, here comes the other truth that's really going to set us on path towards healing and hope. St. Thomas Aquinas once said this. And when I came upon this, probably about 10 plus, maybe 12 years ago, I was like, oh my gosh. This is where the Lord was able to take me from my secret to complete freedom and healing and peace and acceptance and trust that moment, which was awful, has become a blessing in my life. Go figure. Thomas Aquinas said this, when a man is denied true spiritual joys, it is necessary for him to fall into carnal pleasures. I read that in the Magnificat. I had the Magnificat. I had to read it again and again, and I'll say it to you again. When a man is denied true spiritual joys, it is necessary for him to fall into carnal pleasures. What's a true spiritual joy? The presence of a father in a young man's life is a true spiritual joy. The presence of a mother, of good friends, of siblings, of Holy Mother Church, you know, good people, caring people, unconditional love. The unconditional love of a father and a mother, a friend, a brother, a healthy childhood, the knowledge that, as we've all been saying, as Philip set the stage for us yesterday, this beloved sonship and daughtership, like that's a true spiritual joy. And when it's denied, when it's suppressed, when it's taken, when it's stolen, there's trauma there. It's a major wound. I've seen this with men. I've worked with hundreds of men who are wounded, walking wounded. And I'm a walking wounded, but I'm a wounded healer now. But these men are wounded. And yes, the church is a field hospital. And yes, we need to get them back in there. But we got to tend to the wounds. And helping a child, a young, who's a man who's really a child emotionally, understand that he is a beloved son is very healing and helpful. However, we got to address the wounds too. We can talk about beloved sonship, and we are, and we live in that, and we move in that. However, we need to deal with the reality that this man has been wounded, and I was wounded. And so when I heard that from Aquinas, there was a dot connector. Here's what I think the Kingsmen and MGI for a lot of us and the Men's Academy, we connect dots. And I work with men. So we're connecting dots for men from their past. And we're helping them see why things are the way they are. Because they don't say, why am I doing this? They have these compulsions. They're addicted. They're addicted to all sorts of vice. The old AA adage is, if I got somebody to blame, I got a reason to drink. So if you can look to your situation, your past, I said, I didn't have a good father, or dad's died when I was young, and that sucked, and, you know, that shouldn't have happened, and, well, you know, and you just stay there, of course you're going to stay in your vice, in your addiction. You really haven't connected that dot. You've just begun to say that was bad, but you haven't figured out that your self-medication, your choice of self-medication, whether it's drugs, alcohol, sex, money, anger, blame game, whatever, that is only a symptom of the problem. And see, most men just see it as well, you know, that's what I do. Maybe that's what they saw their father. Then a third major point in that maxim is the place of the wound is the place of the healing. This is so important. The place of the wound is the place of the healing. Most men don't want to go to the wound. Why? Because they want to bury it and never visit it again because, frankly, it's not manly to deal in those things. And there's a truth to that to some respect. You know, well, you know, is there anything worse than like a wimpy guy who's just moaning and complaining all the time? He's just like, no one loves me. There's nothing worse than that as a man. So there is some truth to say, you know, man up. Yeah, I like man up. You know, yeah, I remember when I got punched in the face the first time. That was a gut check moment. You know who punched me in the face the first time? My own brother. I didn't know what to do, but I was like, all right, I can sit here and cry, or I think I did for a little bit, but I mean, it is important. And there's a truth to just saying, you know what, we don't always have to figure everything out and, you know, analyze everything and psychologically assess it. But how does one do this? How does one connect the dots, stay manly, and move forward in peace, knowing that he doesn't have to be perfect and that God is there for him and he is a beloved son? And I'll propose to you in this final part of the presentation how we do that. For most, intervention is going to be delayed. It's going to be very delayed. That's where we see men. And I got married late to Joe. I was 33, so I wasn't as old as you, but it was late for me. And it was good that it was late because, frankly, I would not have made a good husband in my 20s. Not because I wasn't a caring individual or I didn't love women or I wasn't kind. I was good. But I was struggling with sin in my life. And I couldn't give what I didn't have. But if I'm gonna love my wife, the way I'm hoping and striving to live now, I couldn't do that back then. So I'm glad I was preserved from it, but I hated it. However, I needed to allow myself to experience what I needed to experience, which was time alone, and to really allow God to heal some of those wounds. But addiction and compulsion with porn and self-sex, they rattle a young man. They rattle him. And unless there's a father there to navigate him through that, he's going to remain rattled, and he's going to be silent about it. He's not going to share this with his buddies. You don't talk about masturbation with your friends. That's just taboo. I don't want to know. Now, you may joke about it in a way that's almost like, it's the elephant in the room that everyone, but it's never really addressed on a real, hey, let's get real with each other. Let's get real. How are you doing, man? You doing all right? I'm okay. I'm fine. You know what fine stands for? Now, I wouldn't use this vernacular, but fouled up, insecure, neurotic, and over emotional. That's what fine means. That's an old AA thing too. You're fine. You're not fine. You're not fine at all. You're screwed up. But the young man, he needs to find reasons to justify his choices. And for a time, he becomes numb to those deeper issues at hand. He will. And he will act out, and the secret will continue. Dr. Patrick Carnes, Dr. Mark Laser has done a great service to the world through their work with this issue. And in Dr. Mark Laser's book, Healing the Wounds of Sexual Addiction, he says something really profound. He says, for every wound in your past, in your youth, that you will treat that in your adult life if it goes unchecked with an addiction. Did you hear that? For every trauma in your past, wound, dad's death, mom and dad divorce, and that's trauma. Mom and dad getting divorced is complete trauma to a child. Dad leaving the family, whatever. For every wound that is in your past as a youth, unless it gets checked, you will treat it, you will self-medicate with an addiction. I believe it. And it's my story. We must get at the root of the problem. It's a spiritual band-aid to just say, I'm going to just pray more when I have an addiction. I'll just pray more. I'll read my Bible. I'll go to church. Those are spiritual band-aids that will do nothing but make you feel good for a short period of time. But you go right back to your medication. Why? Because you haven't gotten at the root of the problem. And this is why young men keep secrets. And this is why in our culture, a fact that a father isn't talking to his boys and making them comfortable as boys talking to him. I talk to my son about everything. Not scandalous things, but I talk to him about his life. I talk to him about being a boy. I talk to him about, you know, protecting his sisters, as Terry told us. But also, I challenge him to be better. And I apologize to him when I fail in front of him, when I am inappropriate speaking to his mom. Son, that was wrong. I shouldn't have done that. I'm sorry. I apologize to my children. I lead with that apology. I show them that that's what a man does. He leads with his weakness, and he says, this is wrong. And the young man needs to grow up knowing that it's okay. It's not unmanly to apologize. And it's not unmanly to initiate the apology. And so as we begin there and talking about the root, we must say, this is probably what God will say to that young man on his judgment day. I believe this. Especially the wounded men. Especially men. And I work with men who struggle with same-sex attraction. I work with men with all sorts of problems. I believe the Lord Jesus will look at that young man or woman and apologize to them. I think that's going to be part of their judgment. I do. I'm not St. John of the Cross, and I don't have a vision of what that looks like. But I believe the type of God that I worship is going to apologize for that boy not receiving what he should have received. Say, I'm sorry that this happened to you. This is not what I wanted for you. But in the brokenness of man, there is redemption, there's healing, and there's hope. And we bring men today through that. But most of the men I deal with today have a deep, deep father wound. And they say, I can never forgive my father. Some of them will say that. And I think the World War II generation, my grandparents, my grandfather fought in the Battle of the Bulge, and my dad was a patriot, and I'm a patriot, and my dad wanted to sign up, you know, to serve his country, but he was a diabetic, and he had a club foot, and he couldn't. But nonetheless, they had a great sense of duty, and we were talking about the selective service out there and how maybe this is a product of kids today having this entitlement. The millennials today, and I hate to qualify millennials, I'm not a millennial, my wife is, and she says, why do you lump me into that? I said, I'm not, I'm just saying there's a sense of entitlement with millennials today. It is. They just expect that you're going to give them stuff. And that's why I asked Joe about the allowance. And he affirmed what I was thinking. I don't want to give my kid an allowance. He hasn't earned it, anything yet. Now, I mean, maybe, you know, cut the grass or something like that. Go out and feed the horses. Do that for a year, and maybe I'll treat you an ice cream cone or something. Okay. Deep father wound. Deep father wounds. Deep brother wounds. I didn't know I had a brother wound till my brother-in-law told me he loved me. And I was like, oh. Why? Because in my family, men don't tell each other that we love each other. My brothers don't never say, I love you. And guess what? I don't say it either, because why? We just don't say it. I tell my kids every day I love them. I said, Ava, did I tell you today I love you? Yes, Daddy, you did. Hear it again, Ava. Therese, did I tell you today I love you? No, I love you. I want them to know they're loved. And I don't want them to be afraid of that word, and nor do I want to overuse that word. But there's deep father wounds that sometimes just a word like love can heal in an instant. Heal in an instant when a father tells his son he loves him. I'll share a quick story, and then I'll close. You guys remember out here in USC, there was a quarterback, Todd Marinovich, back in the late 80s, early 90s. His dad raised him as a boy to be a professional quarterback. He didn't have like a cheeseburger until he was like 20 years old. He was like, if he could give him ancient grains, he was feeding him ancient grains. This kid was a machine. He was a high school All-American. He was a Heisman Trophy candidate at USC. He was drafted into the NFL early, and he had an amazing start to his career. And his dad, like Earl Woods, trained him at a very young age with Tiger Woods to become a professional quarterback. And he became a professional quarterback. Todd Marinovich fell into a drug problem in the NFL, as many guys do that get to the NFL and the money and all those things and the pressure of it all. But the NFL pulled him out and got him some help in the rehab. And eventually he came back in the NFL after some time off, and he started to build his career back. And he became an all-pro. And the story goes like this, real simply, that his father came to him after this happened, and the child is, you know, Todd is making a life again for himself. And his dad said to him, son, I'm proud of you. Todd quit the NFL and never looked back. Why? It's all he ever wanted. It's all he ever wanted to hear. Sometimes that's all it takes to connect that dot, is for a living father to say, I love you. I'm proud of you. I'm sorry. And the healing begins. And it can almost be, as my wife tells me, healing. God's healing is instant. And that's true in scriptures. You see the instant healing of the woman hemorrhaging. God doesn't wait for a while. She's instantly healed. And you see that over and over again in scripture. God doesn't withhold his healing. At every mass, there's healing. It's us that don't claim it. It's us that have to go through the process of forgiveness and all those things. But God doesn't withhold his healing. And with men, it's the same way. We have to go through that journey, especially when it's been a long time and with lots of traumas. But for most men today, there is these father wounds, emotional wounds, physical wounds, spiritual wounds. And the healing work that we've done, we've tried to help men experience that healing love. But for me, I'll share this and then we're done and can take some questions. For me, without having a father, how do you heal a father wound when you don't have a father there to process those things? Now, Dad, it wasn't Dad's fault. He was a diabetic. He wasn't going to live much past 43. He's got diabetes at 3, and frankly, he wasn't going to live much longer. So how do you process that? How do you begin to heal from a father wound that is really just, as Augustine would say, cancer is God's way sometimes of bringing his children home. Augustine said, you know, this is God's way of bringing Dad home. He got diabetes, and it was his cross. It was something he suffered with, and it can be used for good or it can be used for bad. Guess what? Dad's days were numbered from 3 years of age, as there are for all of us. Every day is a gift. But how did I do it? You know what? I heard Philip, the apostle, asked Jesus, "Jesus, show us the Father," on a Holy Week, 1 year of my life. Or maybe I was just reading the scriptures and I came upon it. And I said, "Show us the Father." I'm like, okay, that's almost like me saying, show me Dad. Where's Dad in my life? Who is Dad? Where is Father?" And Jesus says to Philip, "Don't you know when you see me, you see the Father?" It was just like this light bulb moment. Now, this is just my story, but I offer it to you for your own journey if it helps. I said, "Whoa, you mean if I see the Eucharist, I look at Jesus, I'm also seeing the Father?" Now, I knew that theologically, intellectually, that there's three persons, one God. We're polytheists. One God, three persons. I knew that, but I didn't interiorize it. It wasn't personal to me. It was just catechism. It was just catechism. That's all it was. It was apologetics. It was whatever. It wasn't a personal. So I said, "Okay, Jesus, I'm going to take you at your word." So in adoration, I said, "Jesus, father me. You tell me I see the Father. I'm looking at the Father right now. I'm looking at you. Father me, Jesus." And he brought men like Philip Chavez in my life. He brought other men in my life who fathered me, who helped me heal and hear the words that I so needed to hear from my dad. And you better believe that my dad was part of that through his intercession. But the Father knows the needs of his child and his children, and the Heavenly Father wants to give those words to his Son, and he does. So when you hear those words, "You are my beloved Son, in whom I'm well pleased," we must claim them for ourselves as men. We must claim them for ourselves. It's not just for Jesus, the Son. It's for you. We're grafted into the sonship of Christ, the kingdom family of God. Jesus Christ is my brother, and I'm part of that family. And I have a great patrimony, and I have a wonderful father, and I had an inadequate earthly father, but nonetheless, I'm part of him. And I began that journey, and I just said, "Heal me." And I claimed it. God's healing is instant, and it took some time, but frankly, I give thanks for the blessing of the secret, because God can take the secret, which was addiction for 16 years, bring me to freedom, and then through me as a wounded healer, bring healing to so many men. And that's such the gift of having these stories in our past, that they just don't have to be this, "Oh, I wish I just never had that," or, "Gosh, if I didn't have that, I'd be such a better person." That's such a lie from the devil who wants you to think that. Your story is your story, and God wants to use it to bless the world and bless people and bless his church. And no one can speak so profoundly into an issue like the scandal right now who's been abused themselves. And I am a victim of sexual abuse, not through the pornography, don't have the time to get into it. But frankly, I'm in solidarity with all the victims. And I understand it, and I can speak to it, and I can speak to it about healing and redemption and forgiveness. And when Terry encourages us and Father encourages us to pray for the perpetrators, yes, because they were not made that way. They were not born to abuse or wound. They were formed that way. And so we must have great compassion and sympathy. So we talk about the secret that young men keep. We must approach it with great compassion and sympathy. Suffice it to say, time will not permit further presentation for me to go into like, okay, how do you do this, this, and this? We can talk later. The secrets young men keep are, in truth, not the struggle with sexual integrity, but the scars. This is it. This is the final maxim. It's the scars that lie deep within the boy from his past, beneath the surface of the impure behavior. That, in truth, is the secret that we need to expose to the light of Christ. That's where we really need to go. It's not the porn. It's not the self-sex or the fornication, the adultery. It's not that struggle to live chastely. It's the struggle to uncover the wounds. Remember, the place of the wound is the place of the healing. And then final thought here, and I know I have more departures than the Queen Mary, but we're done after this. Okay? Trauma not transformed is transmitted. I know that's just a bomb I just dropped. Trauma not transformed is transmitted. So this trauma that is our past, that we just want to forget and bury and take to our grave and never tell anybody about, is going to be passed on to your children if you don't deal with it. And we have generational healing that needs to happen today in many families. And we have fathers wounding their children. Break the cycle. Be the guy in your family who's got the secret that, and I'm not saying get on a platform and start sharing your story. Well, that may be true for some of you. It could be a help. I know Francis de Sales once said, if you struggle with a virtue, make a public statement about it. Whoa. You could do that in a private setting, but don't keep it to yourself. It's the scars that lay hidden, the ones that you're not even aware of, is why you're not healing, why you're not finding that healing, why you're not finding freedom. And revelation about these things and comes through exposing our wounds. It's what Christ put on a cross in the exposition of his wounds that the greatest healing comes. So it's in exposing our wounds. And I'd say not in a public setting always for some of us, but for me it has been that way. But I did it privately first to another brother in the Lord, to someone who would listen, that the greatest healing came. And that's, I think, what we have to do, and that's my message for you today about the secrets young men keep. Take some questions now.
Brother Mark, awesome presentation. Always a joy that you have such amazing insight. What I want to ask you is, you mentioned a book, something to do with, and I needed the quote, I guess, healing the wounds, if you don't heal the wounds, that will create an addiction. You mentioned the book, can you?
Sure, Dr. Mark Laser, Healing the Wounds of Sexual Addiction.
I'm sorry, repeat that?
Dr. Mark Laser is the author. He's in Eden Prairie, Minnesota, and it's called Healing the Wounds of Sexual Addiction. It's the Bible, I think, of sexual addiction. It's fantastic. Yeah, he said, and I'm paraphrasing it in the book, but he said, for every trauma or wound that's in your past, in your youth, that if it remains unchecked, where, in other words, it's just kind of never dealt with, that you will treat it in your adulthood, and each wound you will treat with an addiction. So it could be smoking, could be drugs, could be sex, could be other things. But you'll treat it, you'll self-medicate with an addiction. I think it's true.
If it's not dealt with.
If it's not dealt with, yeah. If it goes unchecked, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, sure.
Thank you, Marcus.
Sure.
Phenomenal.
Oh, awesome.
I have a question. So I kind of realized that you may have some deep wounds as I'm a younger brother. So my older brother. How do we approach that? I think you said maybe sit with other men.
You personally or your younger siblings?
Yeah.
How do you talk about with someone who maybe abused you?
Fish it out to see if I have some problems or wounds. Talking with another man, you're saying maybe just sit
down. Oh, I see.
Just, you know, talk about it, try to figure out what the problem is, what are the issues.
Let me just ask a quick qualifier. Does the brother has played a part in those wounds, or is it just another man that you're talking
about? Oh, no, my older brother. I think I have maybe wounds from my older brother.
Okay, got it.
Mentoring and being there. The stuff that I'm now just hearing you, maybe I do have some issues with problems, that things that happen still kind of like maybe your mom.
Unreconciled, sure. No, I think it's a great question, and I think it's one we got to have, and hopefully your brother has the maturity and can depersonalize it a little bit. I think you need to approach your brother and pray. I think you need to code it in prayer first, especially as you approach someone who might be part of the wound. I have an older brother who's inflicted a lot of wounds on me, and frankly, he's just not prepared to deal with it. And I have tried on numerous occasions to broach that conversation, and he is not able to penetrate that. It's like this invincible ignorance, like almost like a Protestant who's not willing to accept the perpetual virginity of Mary. It's just not able to assent to it. So in that case, like my brother, he's not willing to go there. So I got to just let that go. I got to just forgive him, pray for his healing. But frankly, he's not going to be a source of my healing in his acknowledgement and recognition of maybe what he pleads. So most abused people never get the acknowledgement from their abuser. So if your older brother played a part in that, and what older brother hasn't, you may get it. You may be blessed to get that. Most don't. Here's what I would suggest. Take it to a men's group. Take it to another brother in the Lord. Take it to guys that will listen. I'm reading Augustine's sermons on the flight out here. I read them on the way back. But sometimes just listening and not saying a word and allowing another man just to say, hey, this happened to me. and just get it out there. Like, again, once it's a secret, it just remains that shame and that guilt. But when we just share it once with one man or a group of people, again, as Francis of Sales said, you struggle with a virtue, make a statement about it. There's something in this, as St. James talks about in his epistle, there's something in this outward declaration of I failed, and I'm putting it out there. Why? Holy Mother Church can pray for you, which is good. Your brother and Lord can pray for you. But it's just like you're kind of free. And I get it from like the pro-gay agenda, the coming out, as they say. Like, it's very freeing to those people because there's this liberation of it. And I think it's twisted, of course, in the way that they're using it. But I think there's a truth in it, too, that there's this liberation. I don't have to keep it a secret anymore. And I think when it comes to our healing and the abuse that we've experienced, whether in family, and Laser talks about this in Healing the Wounds of Sexual Addiction, that family is the biggest area where traumas are taking place. Mothers and fathers, yes, siblings to each other. We all play roles in families. My wife's one of 12 children. She's number 11. And in big families, there's role problems, and it's good and bad. You know, you're the lost child, you're the prince, you're the saint, you're the athlete, you're the troublemaker, you're the convict, you're the enabler, you're the doer, you're the clown. And all these roles in and of themselves are fine, as long as they don't become inflexible. But if you're always the one, you're the scapegoat, you've been always blamed for everything because it's just got to be you. But in reality, is most times it's not you, or at least half the time it's not you, but you're always blamed, that becomes a real traumatizing situation. So to your point with your brothers, whatever that is, you want to reflect on that. Take it to the Lord in prayer. Take it to adoration. Present it at the foot of the cross and just say, Lord, I don't know what to do with this, but I give it to you and guide me and show me what you want me to do with this. But I would suspect that it involves sharing it with somebody. That would be what I would say. So men's group, to your question, a brother in the Lord would be the way I would go. If you can have it with your brother and he's prepared for it and he's got the emotional maturity to do it, have it with him. That would be the best case. He might say, brother, I'm sorry I did that to you. I didn't know any better. Or he may not, but you might want to start there. And if he just says, hey, I don't even know what you're talking about, just forget it. Just move on. He's not going to give it to you, so just pray for him. Anybody else? Thanks, though. That was a good question.
Mark, how about confidentiality? I mean, you're talking to the gentleman over here. Air service, you have to trust that person.
You do.
I think to the great thing, mid group, whatever, but somebody you can trust. And this has to be somebody you can just lay it off. It's kind of hard sometimes. I'm a victim of those too. When I open it up, and they'll be used later against me. But you know what? After someone heard that, it came to me and was just like, say, you know what? Thank you for opening up.
Yeah, 100%. That's why you kind of vet, you know, who you're going to share it with. Men's group, usually it's an unwritten thing that is confidential. But at our healing retreats, we raise our hands the first day. Philip's been there. We say, everything that's said in this room stays in this room. You got to establish a safe container. So in the process of doing healing work, especially at the really intentional level where we're going to the place of the wound, you want to make sure that's a safe container. So 100%. However, if it's a brother in the Lord that, you know, you don't have to be so formal and make him raise his hand and put his hand on a Bible or something, but just say, hey, you know, you're the first person I'm going to share this with. Please hold this inviolate. Don't share this with anybody. But I trust you enough. I just got to share this with you. And let me give you just let you hear it. I want to share more of who I am with you because I care that much about you. I want you to know my story. Most of us are behind fig leaves, you know, like we walk around like a fig leaf. You know, how you doing today? I'm fine. You know, you heard up with fouled up, insecure, neurotic. You know, it's no one goes deep anymore. There's no depth. And so, as Philip and I, we've talked about it, there's probably very few people, and I have this bit of disclosure with Philip, although he's on the West Coast now, there's very few people that I will disclose that information. My wife, some men, I would say maybe 2 to 3 men in my apostolate, and I have about 5,000 men in the apostolate, that I've shared, like, everything with. So you got to be selective. Why? Because you're going to get wounded again. Right? As you said, the calumny and the slander and the detraction, all that stuff. My gosh. So be very discerning about that. I don't mean just unload to the world. The pro-life movement is great. I'm a big advocate of sharing our message, especially if we've been wounded in the pro-life movement. You know, women who are post-abortive, men who are post-abortive. But let's not take a post-abortive man or woman and just put them up in front of a stage and say, all right, share your story. They may not be ready for that. They got to go through healing. And so I'm not saying that. However, I mean, after 15 years of doing this, a lot of the world knows my story. But frankly, I don't really share it every place I go. It's not always needed, you know. But thank you for making that comment, Rich. Appreciate it. Yeah, there's a lot of healing programs out there, and you got to be careful what you subscribe to. And thank you for sharing that. Vulnerability is key to leadership and leading with our weakness. We talk about, however, most people in the world don't know how to process that. And if it's used as a weapon against you to make you see that you were the problem, we got to remember that we're fearfully and wonderfully made, that we're made in the image and likeness of God, and our dignity comes right from that alone. And so our story is important, but our worth and all the things that we take from a healthy environment growing up, and the self-worth comes from mother and father, and you know all those things that we didn't get, and now we pay to go to a program to get it. I think this is where I'm going to find it, whether it's a self-help thing or Tony Robbins or whatever, you know, we use to help ourselves. It's only going to get you so far. Like, as I talk with the guys that have been in therapy for years, guys will come to my men's group and they'll say, I've gotten more out of 8 months of this men's group than I have in 12 years of therapy. And why is that? Because God is there. I mean, they might be with a secular therapist or something like that. You know, I'm just saying, even a good therapist will say, I can only get you so far. God is the divine physician. Augustine talks about it. He does the work, the true work, the true healing. And so as we discern programs we plug into, and gosh, we ended up getting wounded. I was sharing with Mary Lee yesterday that there's nothing more wounding than being in the church, working for the church, and having people within tearing you down. There's nothing more wounding than that, I think, in anything I've ever done. Even worse than the sex abuse that I've experienced. People that are supposed to appreciate and love you and respect you and care for you in the church have wounded me more than my sex abuser who's still in a jail cell in Connecticut right now. Because they did not protect my heart. They took my story and take it out of context, and they're gonna criticize you, they're gonna tear you down, and you lay your heart out there. Now sometimes you go to give talks and things don't come out. Timmy will say, probably agree with this, Philip. Things will come out differently than the way you planned them to say. And you're like, why the hell did I say it that way? And it just came out that way. And now someone's gonna take it and run it and use it as a sword against you. And you're gonna fall on that sword in the church. And it's been very painful. And I watched Archbishop Chaput deal with this in Philadelphia. And, you know, the church doesn't always love you back. And so this vulnerability in the church, I think we need to be very discerning with as well. Because, you know, people are going to say, and I know this isn't actually your question, you're making a comment, but you got to be careful in this setting. Like, I don't know 80% of you people here. So I don't know what you're going to do with this story and what you would say. Glory be to the Father, and to the Son, and the Holy Spirit. As it was in the beginning, is now, and ever shall be, world without end. Amen.
We hope you enjoy this recording from our Masculine Genius Institute Summit. This institute was founded through the collaborative effort of the King's Men and the Men's Academy. For more information and for other resources, you can visit their website at thekingsmen.org and themensacademy.org. Thank you.